Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chelsea, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming into you on your speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Jackie from Houston, and I have Rahul here from Stamford, Connecticut, and Alex from Waterville, Maine. And gentlemen, what a fiery week of Champions League we've had so far. Rahul, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. It was, like you said, fiery and a good result for us, so I'm doing pretty well.
Alex, how are you doing? And you satisfied with the results as well?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I would be more satisfied if we were going in with a clear advantage, but the away goal is crucial, and my boy Christian Pulisic got it, so what's not to love?
I love it when Alex jumps right onto Pulisic, but that's definitely deserved. And Rahul, why don't you take us through the starting lineup, and then we'll go through the game a little bit.
Yeah, so it was Eduardo Mendy back in goal, Christensen, Thiago Silva, Rudiger, Aspilicueta, N'Golo Kanté, Jorginho, Mount, Ben Chilwell, Timo Werner, and we've already mentioned Pulisic. And then this was the same lineup from the West Ham game over the weekend. And turns out this is the first time Tuchel's named an unchanged lineup.
Wow. I did not expect that, but doesn't seem so surprising now that you've said that. They did perform pretty well against a pretty strong West Ham team, but I'm also excited, and I want to bring Alex in here for this, because Pulisic seems to be maintaining his fitness and at high levels of pace and energy.
Yeah, I think it's been clear to Chelsea fans and fans of Pulisic for a while that if he can maintain his fitness, he's going to be hitting high-level performances week in, week out, and we're finally seeing the consistency that I think a lot of Chelsea fans and men's national team, USMNT fans, have been begging from Pulisic, thanks to, on the back of all of these injuries and a little bit of poor form. All the people who knew his ability and who had backed him from the start, we've just been sort of praying that he'd get a good run of games to showcase his talent again. And here he is. Here he is stepping up again on a big stage. He collected man of the match in a quarterfinal, and then here he is in the semifinal delivering the goods yet again. It's great to see him at his best.
And a little bit of credit due to Tuchel as well, because when he came in, Pulisic was sitting down on the bench quite a bit, and we were all kind of scratching our heads because, Alex, you said that form that Pulisic hit during the after the lockdown, I guess, when it was Project Restart, was incredible. I mean, he was one of the best players that Chelsea had, and we're like, when is Tuchel going to play him? And credit Tuchel, he's like, I know what you can do. Let me explore the other players first. You keep getting fit, and we're going to use you really well toward the end of the season. But I'm excited to see that. Rahul, I want to talk a little bit about the formation, the starting lineup. Are you satisfied with who he picked? Are you happy that he picked the same 11, maybe?
I am. I think it was merited, like you said. The West Ham game was a good game from Chelsea. Everyone that played did well. So to see them come out and have the same players, it was good, and I think merited, like I said. The interesting thing was the tweak in the formation. Traditionally, we've been doing a 3-4-3. This was more of a 3-5-2 with Werner and Pulisic operating as the forwards. And actually, Tuchel was asked about this, and he said, I think initially he was planning to go as a 4-3-3 with Mount playing in that three midfield. And so once he saw the Real Madrid team sheet, he realized that they were trying to match our three center backs in our formation. So he switched it up. But even then, he still left Mount kind of low with Jorginho and N'Golo Kanté. So that was interesting to see.
Yeah, it's good to see the versatility of Mount. But I want to jump onto another player here. It was a difficult night for this gentleman in particular. So I'm going to open it up to you, Alex, first. Timo Werner, what were your thoughts on his performance?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think he got a ton of stick for that one major miss in particular, when Pulisic headed a cross goal and he had the majority of the goal to aim at. I mean, certainly I saw today a tweet saying that just because Timo Werner has missed a lot of these chances, these types of big, big chances, this particular chance looks worse than it is, perhaps, in the eyes of some. Certainly credit should be given to Courtois for an amazing save. But you do expect top-class players to be putting those in. I think it's yet another case of where all the best players miss, But what's difficult is that Timo has made a bit of a habit of missing these large chances this season. But for example, I mean, we've seen maybe not a great example because he scored a banger against us later in the game, but we saw Sergio Aguero miss a complete sitter against us in, I believe it was the 6-0 embarrassment of Chelsea. I mean, he missed an absolute tap-in, but he's been consistently performing. He rarely misses. And then obviously the tap-in is like, oh yeah, you can laugh about it, but it's a one-off. Here you're seeing a player who's definitely struggled for confidence all season. He's missed a few of these types of chances. So, I mean, I try to defend him, but certainly you could level some criticism at him for this. But, you know, I still do cling to the idea that he gets in good positions. The fact that he misses so much shows that if he can just find that finishing touch, he's in a good place to be scoring these goals. The fact that he's in these places to find these.
I think your analysis on that particular aspect of Werner's game is spot on. He keeps getting those opportunities, which means he hasn't given up. He doesn't stop running. He doesn't keep making it into great positions to have those opportunities. So I'm going to grab two things from your statement there. One was, of course, Werner is getting these opportunities and missing them. My opinion is more of the fact that I wonder if we played a world-class striker. Okay, not a world-class striker. Maybe a Giroud, he's a world-class striker in my eyes, but or a Tammy Abraham. Would we be bearing these goals? Would we have 4 or 5 goals against Madrid in the first 15, 20 minutes right there? Because there were so many opportunities. And the second thing I took away from your points there was, you said Thibaut Courtois made a good save. So the snake's coming through and making saves against Chelsea this time around. But Rahul, I want to bring you in here for some insight on Timo Werner. We talk a lot about him, and rightly so. He has got a lot of opportunities, a lot of chances. Thoughts on Timo and how he performed in this game in particular and back-to-back games?
Yeah, I mean, I think that miss kind of set the tone for him for the rest of that game. You could tell that once that miss happened, he was kind of demoralized, not confident. But the one thing that I do want to bring up is he kept making runs in behind Madrid's defense. And every time he did that, we failed to find those runs. And that was the frustrating part for me was, yes, he missed that chance and he didn't let that get to him in that he still kept trying. But we didn't find him. And that eventually at one point he was like, why am I making these runs if no one's going to play me through? And he is in this team. He is in this setup because he brings that pace to the attack. You brought up a Giroud. You brought up Abraham. They're both good players, and maybe they would have scored that chance, but they don't have that pace that we require when we're trying to play against these bigger teams and get in behind their defense. And that was my frustration with the squad was you have Timo, find him and let him go in and let him get, you know, get in on the ball behind their defense.
So let me ask you a quick question to you guys before we move on and not hang up on Timo Werner here. Do you think, and this is an open question to either of you, whoever wants to go first, that the pass is not going to Timo Werner because at this point, his teammates have lost a little bit of confidence in him, saying we can give him a beautiful pass, but he may not bury that?
I'm not sure. I think definitely you see people talking about that for all sorts of players. Sometimes if a player's in poor form or they've missed a big chance, people talk about, oh, their teammates have lost confidence in them. I mean, you see, for example, that snippet from actually a Madrid game earlier this season where Benzema, I believe, said, on my mother's life, he's playing against us, about Vinicius. I think it was. But I guess that example aside, I don't think it's too frequently that top class players would turn down the opportunity. Say a Jorginho would turn down the opportunity to play a beautiful through ball when the opportunity's there simply because, oh, it's Timo on the end of it. I mean, certainly I'm sure his teammates aren't super pleased that he's not burying some of these chances he's getting. But I think if you're Jorginho or you're Mount, you see the opportunity to play a cutting through ball pass, you're going to take the opportunity. I think maybe it speaks more about the decision-making of our players. And certainly there were a few times in this past game and in several games, I think so far under Tuchel, where we had a little bit of play reminiscent of past Chelsea managers, where we tend to turn around and go back when maybe we should be pressing a little more forward. And I think if anything, a player failing to find Timo on a darting run says that we're playing a little more in maybe more of a conservative way rather than they're intentionally singling him out.
Yeah, Rahul, your final thoughts before we let the Timo Werner subject go?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're not passing to him because they don't believe in him or they've lost hope. I think most of those chances or balls that could have been played into him fell to Conte. And we know Conte's final ball or decision-making isn't the best. Now, there's no hit against Conte, but I think that's the issue there. There was one instance at the end of that first half where Pulisic did play Werner in. So you could see that with the more attack-minded player, they do decide to let him go and let you know, find Timo. So I think with the Mount or Jorginho, like Alex mentioned, if the ball fell to them, they would look for him and try to at least play him in. So I think it's more about who it falls to in terms of the ball versus just believing in Timo.
All right. So we'll leave the Timo Werner subject for now. At the end of the day, I think he keeps putting in the runs and putting in the opportunities. So fingers crossed, things will come his way in the long term for Chelsea. But Rahul, why don't you run us through the first half? Because we've talked about some key moments here, but we can open through and discuss a little bit more.
Yeah, so the opening 25 minutes, guys, I mean, we were all over Madrid. We made them look like an average side. They were lost. They couldn't cope up with us. They would press us, and we would beat the press with one or two balls, and then we would just be right onto their defense. So for me, that's been the best opening half of a half, you could say, I've seen from Tuchel, under Tuchel. And I was very impressed, and luckily we capped that off with a brilliant goal from Pulisic and a brilliant ball from Rudiger to Pulisic over the top. And Pulisic does well, stays calm, stays composed, and finishes it off.
Yeah, I thought his finish was brilliant, guys. I think the ball was stuck to his foot like glue. Alex, any thoughts on that finish?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely vintage Pulisic. Late season, big stage, steps up and gets the job done. And it's great. I can't ever praise him enough. I love my job, you could call it, of just posting and updating people on Pulisic, because he's just a top class player. He's doing things on the biggest stage for the biggest clubs. It's impressive. I mean, he made a name for himself when he was so young that it's easy to forget that he's only 22. I mean, normally you talk about maybe an attacking player being in their prime when they're 26, 27, 28. That's when you think, okay, they're at their physical and mental peak. They've developed their technical ability. They've developed their decision-making, all of that. He's only 22. I mean, he could go another 4 years of developing and not even hit his ceiling. But I think it was great to see. He finished it beautifully. He sat the snake down in the grass. And there you go. It's, you know, that brought me great, great joy until the equalizer. But Pulisic did the job. If he goes in and gets us a goal every game, nobody's complaining.
He sat Thibaut Courtois down. Brilliant. Rahul, he was the first American to score in the Champions League semifinals as well.
That is right. And just on the Thibaut Courtois part, if you go on or your iPhones and you type in snake, a green snake comes up. And Thibaut Courtois was wearing green. So that's all I have to say on that part. First American scoring this in the Champions League semifinals, youngest Chelsea goal scorer in the Champions League semifinals. So a bit of history for him. And he's making Americans proud all over the world. And I want to touch on Timo Werner. I know you said we've moved on from him, but in the build-up to this goal, when Pulisic brings the ball down, turns around, sees that Courtois is there, but there's no other defender, what Timo does in that moment helps open up more space for Pulisic by dragging Varane with him towards goal. And by the time Pulisic's beaten Courtois, he's basically just has two defenders on the goal line waiting to block the shot, and then he still manages to hit it by them. So a little bit of credit to Timo Werner in there as well.
Yeah, credit due where credit is due. And honestly, guys, like Rahul said, the first 25, 30 minutes we were dominating that game, but Was it a case of lack of concentration, or was that Karim Benzema goal just that good? Alex?
Yeah, for the Benzema goal, I think it's not necessarily a case of a lack of concentration. I think certainly our players could have been a bit more switched on. And as with any goal that's ever scored in this game, you can say surely someone could have done something to prevent it. But in this particular case, I think you almost have to assume that a player as quality as Benzema is going to get a chance, perhaps two, perhaps three. We saw him, he clipped the post before he scored. He was threatening all game. And when there's someone of his quality on the pitch, you almost have to assume that he's going to score at some point. And then it's down to your attackers to do the job in the final third. So certainly it would have been nice not to concede that chance after we'd been dominating the game, playing very well. But I think there's nothing really to get bogged down in there. It's just what happens. That's the game. A couple bounces, a couple headers, beautiful finish. And that's when you need your attackers to step up and get us that second goal, that third goal that we knew we could have done.
Yeah, and Rahul, speaking of Benzema, he was the Formula One car on the field. Our go-kart Giroud did not make it. He scores his 71st Champions League goal. And a lot of pundits are talking about him. Sometimes Benzema is underrated or not as valued as some other strikers on big teams such as Bayern Munich or even at Chelsea maybe. What were your thoughts on him hitting that milestone?
It's a great achievement. He does it without taking any penalties. So it's all goals from inside the box, outside the box. And he was their only threat throughout that whole game. And it's interesting how it worked out because they take the corner shot. They put it to the far post. Casemiro wins one header. Militao wins the second header. And then it falls to Benzema. And so at that point, you can't really do much. Like Alex was saying, you've almost just got to sit back and say, you know, with the team like Madrid in a semi-final, one chance is going to be enough for them to score. And with the player like Benzema, that's all it takes. So credit where credit is due, like we were saying with Timo, Benzema does the business. And it's a good reminder for us for the next leg that no matter how good we are and how much we're dominating, they always have the ability to score and cancel out our away goal.
Yeah, and before we get to the next leg, Rahul, I'll have you run through the second half here in just a second. But I want to talk about the first half and two players on the Madrid side, which is Militao and Casemiro, the two players that you just mentioned. They were skirting the line with some pretty hefty tackles on Pulisic and Mason Mount, respectively. In fact, when I watched it, I could have said maybe one, maybe two could have ended up being a red card. They were pretty vicious. And it was only one time they did that. It was several times that they seeked to destroy our game by being a little more physical than you'd normally see in a Champions League game. So, Alex, I'll start with you. What did you think about their tactics? Was that maybe a little more dirty than we're used to seeing in the Champions League?
I don't know if it's more dirty than I would expect, because frankly, of all the teams that you might or all even the players who you might expect, I think Casemiro certainly has a reputation of being a tough one. Certainly Sergio Ramos, if he were on the field, I'm sure he would have contributed to the foul count. But you know, it is what it is. It's never beautiful to see. It's part of the game. I think you do hope that perhaps they're penalized a little more, maybe another yellow or two, maybe the yellows come out earlier, because you don't want to set a precedent of that being how you win games. But I mean, it's a part of the game. It was better than the Porto game for sure. But even then, I saw a stat, I think that in the past 10 years, the only players to have been fouled six or more times in Champions League semifinal alongside Pulisic after this game, and he only played 65 minutes as a reminder, were Neymar, Eden Hazard, I believe Mesut Ozil. And I think Ramos himself was one of those. So I'm forgetting one, I'm almost sure, but you know, it's not a beautiful part of the game. I would have loved to see a little more punishment, but you sort of have to expect the team like Madrid with players like Casemiro, they're going to come out swinging.
I'll give us your quick 15-second take and then maybe drive us into the second half.
Yeah, I think that was their way of letting our young players, fast players, know that they're in a fight and intimidating them, to be honest. But the two players you mentioned, Militao and Casemiro, didn't get booked at all. So that tells you that the other players put in tackles that the referee felt were more dangerous and worthy of a yellow card. But that's Real Madrid. They won it three times on the spin, and they'll do whatever it takes to get into your head and stop you.
All right, drive us through to the second half, Rahul.
Not much to talk about, really. It was after all the fireworks and domination from Chelsea in the first half, I think the second half kind of turned into more of a tactical battle between the two managers. I think Zidane realized that his team was in a fight and it really wasn't their day in terms of everything that they had planned. And so they held back a little. And Chelsea as well, after getting the away goal, were always going to be a little more conservative and not open themselves up, especially after we conceded that equalizer. So I think it just went back and forth, substitutions. Eden Hazard comes on, which was a little bit emotional to see. But Chelsea then bring on Ziyech, Havertz, and Reece James. So changes and fouls and back and forth, and that kind of just was the second half.
Yeah, it definitely feels like I think we could have gotten a little more from the game. I think everybody sort of shared that mindset. And even now, just looking at the yellow card counts, as you were sort of referring to, they had five yellow cards to our one, which was Pulisic, actually, which just does make you feel like, I mean, I think, as you said, Jackie, destroying the game a little bit, trying to really slow things down, mess with our play style. And we had five shots on target to their one. So it does seem, from a statistical point of view, from watching the game, really in all aspects, it does seem like this is a game that on another day, or maybe 80% of the time, you would assume the team with the stats lined up and who played like Chelsea did, you would assume they're coming away with something. So certainly a little disappointing there. But then, as you said, Rahul, with those subs that came on, they were attacking changes as well. So we weren't necessarily, I think maybe the players dropped off a little bit after our goal, but we weren't gunning for a draw, which I thought was good to see.
Yeah. So guys, I'm going to ask you two questions and then Rahul, I'll let you go first. One, are you satisfied with the result 1-1? And two, who was your man of the match?
I said 1-1 in our preview, so I've got to be satisfied. But knowing what we saw in the first 25 minutes and the chances that we had, it's slightly disappointing that we come away with a draw and not killing Madrid when they were at their lowest, because you expect them to do better in the second half. And if Ramos is back, then they will play more of their familiar formation. But 1-1 is good enough, a away goal, and we've got to do the business at home. My man of the match, I will give it to N'Golo Kanté, because I know Alex is going to give it to Pulisic. So keep things a little bit different. But Kanté, for his injury record and the knocks that he's had, that guy just keeps going for days. And if this game had gone on for another 90 minutes, he would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah, it reminds me of that picture you put up on the Premier Chelsea Instagram with Planet Kanté. He covers so much of the field, and honestly, I don't know where he gets that much energy from. But Alex, 1-1, a good result in your eyes, and are you going to stick with Pulisic as man of the match?
Yeah, 1-1's good enough. I saw someone mentioning that back in 2012, we drew the first leg of our semifinal, so the away leg. So it's, you know, what a time. It's great, I think, to see that we're not necessarily happy with it. As someone was saying, the fact that we're moaning as a fan base about not beating Real Madrid in a Champions League semifinal away, that indicates that our standards have risen. That indicates that we really are. I mean, I don't want to jinx it like Ferdinand when he was like, Man United are back, when Ole got appointed. But I will say Chelsea seems to be back after a couple slightly disappointing years with some trophies in there. I think we really are raising those standards, raising the bar, and the players have raised the bar, the managers raised the bar, the fans have raised the bar. I'm glad that we're not satisfied with it. So, you know, I have to take it. If anyone knows how to play for a clean sheet, as we've seen, Thomas Tuchel knows how to play for a clean sheet. So I would not be dissatisfied in the slightest with a disgusting, scrappy 0-0 draw at Stamford Bridge. But as for the man of the match, I have to stick with Pulisic. Maybe Conte was very impressive. Jorginho, very impressive. Our midfield did the job again, but Pulisic came up with a crucial away goal.
Another well-deserved shout right there for sure. And I do have to agree with both of you guys. I think standards have raised 1-1 against Real Madrid. I mean, before the game, we would be tickled to death that that's a result that we're taking back to Stamford Bridge. But watching the game, seeing the chances, you would hope we ever got more out of it. But as you look at it, it is a two-leg tie. There is an opportunity for another good game at Stamford Bridge. And like Alex said, if it's a 0-0, a scrappy, I'll take it. But if we win 1-2, I'm happy with that as well. So 1-1 on the back of this result is not too bad at all. And my man of the match is, I'm actually going to stick with Jorginho this time. And I know a lot of eyebrows will be raised here if you listen to the Premier Chelsea. I'm not the biggest fan of Jorginho, but I felt like he did not put a foot wrong. He was getting stuck in. The intricate 1-2 passes to get out of tight spots is something that he was very famous for in Napoli, and I see it coming to fruition right now in this Tuchel system. It was quite a joy to actually see him play these things and get out of sticky situations. So
yeah,
that really wraps up. Sorry, go ahead, Alex.
No, just there was also one thing I noticed where Conte actually gave the ball away, and it was Jorginho who mopped up after it, which was just a funny little turn of events there, where I think people more expect it to be the other way around. But Conte had a fantastic game, but I noted that and I was like, wow, that's, you know, that shows you Jorginho really is trying his best, putting in good work defensively too, which has always been something he's criticized for. So I like your pick there.
Yep, Jorginho to the rescue there. So gents, that really covers the game with Real Madrid and Chelsea there. Again, a wonderful event. We're in the semifinals of the Champions League. There's nothing but celebrations going on, but there was another game going on in Paris, and that was PSG versus Manchester City. So, Rahul, what was the scoreline there?
It was a 2-1 win for Manchester City in Paris. So they did get two away goals, and I think that sets them up pretty well for the second leg back in Manchester. And the fact that they shut out Mbappe and Neymar, I think Mbappe was, this is the first game since 2013, 2014, where he didn't register a shot on goal. So that's credit to everything that Pep's done with the defense this season, and Ruben Dias and John Stones, of all people, keeping those two players quiet. So good result for them. I think Paris were all over them in that first half, but they came out in the second half, City did, and turned it around. So credit to them.
Yeah, very, very impressive, especially with the two goals away from home. They are sitting in the driver's seat, quite comfortable. But again, PSG have some massive names. And Alex, one of those massive names that you would love at Chelsea is actually Mbappe. Now, is that going to happen? We don't think so. But Rahul just gave us an interesting stat there in that he did not register a shot. Interesting things there, right, with PSG and Manchester City?
Yeah, that's a game that's always going to be a nail biter between two sides that good. And I didn't personally get to watch it, but I think no matter which of those teams, I can tell actually I'm getting so far ahead of myself. I've been tricked into confidence because I was about to completely unironically say, no matter which of those teams we face in the final, it'll be very difficult. Now I'm not going, that was just an admission. I'm not saying that seriously because I don't want to jinx us. but I think it's very easy to forget that we still have a serious job to do. I think Pulisic himself said the job's not done. We have to bring it back and put in our best performance. But both of those teams, quality attack, quality defense, they're going to be a formidable opponent to any team who faces them in the final, ourselves or Madrid. So I think the Champions League final, no matter who features, will be a mouthwatering clash for sure.
Listen, I love the confidence, and I hope that you are correct with that confidence that we are going to meet any of those teams in the final and potentially go toe-to-toe with them. But at this point, we're going to take over into the Chelsea Women's league. And Rahul, I think you have some good information for us here.
I do. I just want to touch on that Pulisic interview that Alex brought up. I don't know if many of you have seen it, but there's a interview with Kobe Bryant from 2009 in the NBA Finals. And they're asking him about, you know, the next game, and you think you won the finals, and he goes, job's not done yet. And that was the same energy I was getting out of Pulisic in this interview. He was very focused to the point. The interviewer was trying to get him to crack a smile, and Pulisic just answered what he had to and moved on. So that tells you where his head's at, and he's trying to get to the final and be, I think, the first American to lift that trophy.
Yeah, indeed, he would be the first U.S. men's footballer to ever lift the Champions League, which is big praise coming from what Alex said, a 22-year-old young man trying to still find his way in football. But exciting times ahead, and Rahul, maybe you can take us through the Women's League now.
Yes, yes, yes. So the women's also played in a Champions League semifinal against Bayern Munich in Germany. Unfortunately, they lost 2-1, but they did get a crucial away goal. So that's a good sign from that first game. And even though they went down in the early minutes of that first half, they found a way back in from Melanie Leopold. In fact, we put a video up on the Premier Chels account where the cross comes in, a Bayern player heads it off of Leopold's into the net. So she had no idea what was going on, but she gets the away goal, and we bring that back to the bridge, back to the King's Meadow, I beg your pardon. So that game is this Sunday, the 2nd of May, and the women's team have had the week off. So they played last Sunday and they have the week off. So it will be good to see them all back and energized for this game.
Yeah, it's exciting to see them in the semifinals. And I know we didn't get the result we wanted, but like you touched on, crucial, crucial away goal here. And we have to be tuned in and waiting to see what happens in this second leg here. All right, so that wraps up the Women's League, or the Women's Champions League, I should say. Rahul, do you have any comments on that before we move on?
I do, actually, not on the Champions League, but just on the women's team, staying with them. So tonight, I believe, was the London Football Awards for 2021. And while the men's team didn't win any of the awards, the women's team did. So Fran Kirby won the Super League, Women's Super League Player of the Year Award. And Neum Charles won the winning Women's Young Player of the Year Award. So good signs for our squad, the women's squad, and congratulations to both players.
Yep, absolutely. So now moving on to our Premier League preview. And it's another quick London derby with Chelsea versus Fulham. Alex, any thoughts before we jump into this game?
I think my only thoughts are that I'd love to have us get a win, because I think this is exactly what we need. I can't even make up anything else to say about this. It's just, we need a win. We need a win for confidence. We need a win for our position in the table. We need a win for the fans. We need a win for everyone at this point. I think the Madrid result, we did what we had to do. But now it's got to be full focus right back to the Premier League. And I'm backing us for a good showing. Hopefully, I think the boys will be hungry after that Madrid draw. I think they'll want to actually go out and get the result this time that perhaps we missed out on in this most recent match. So that's what I'm hoping happens.
Yeah. And all due respect to Fulham, gentlemen, I think this couldn't be a better time to play a Fulham at this point after coming off a big Champions League midweek game. Fulham are sitting 18th with 4 losses on the bounce and 1 draw. Now, can they be dangerous? Absolutely. It's a London derby, but they have quite a bit to play for to try and get out of the relegation zone. But realistically, it's getting very, very tough. So we need a good win here, and that can give us a little bit of daylight should results go differently in other games. So Rahul, do you want to take us through a predicted starting lineup, maybe?
Yeah, I do. And in fact, the last time we played them, that was the first time Alex was on the podcast. So just a little bit of history of the TPC. But starting 11, I think Tuchel's going to rotate, and there should be rotation based on the game we just played and the game we will play next week. So I think Kepa comes back in goal. Aspilicueta may continue because he came off in the 65th minute. Christensen in for Silva in that central defensive position. Zuma, I think, comes in. He hasn't played since the FA Cup semifinal. Reece James, Jorginho, I think, has to play because we're short in that central midfield position. I think Conte gets rested. If Kovacic is fit, and I think they were targeting this game, he comes in. Alonso, left wing back, Ziyech, Mount, and Havertz.
Yes, every week we predict the lineup whenever we're playing these games, and every week we always come up with a strong lineup, which is great to see. Interesting to see Mount continues to play. I think at this point he's probably the first name on the team sheet. Any calls to maybe rest him or save him for the next game, Alex?
I mean, I think certainly for most players you would say, oh, maybe they'll perform better if you give them some time off, rest their legs. But at the same time, Mason Mount, at least in particular, he just doesn't seem to stop. He's got that N'Golo Kante type engine in him. We've seen that he's not injury prone. Perhaps that's an advantage he has over N'Golo Kante, at least at this stage in his career. So maybe logically you would say, okay, sure, you rest a player for a slightly less important game, but with Mason Mount, I almost feel like, fingers crossed, you don't have to take those levels of precautions. And I think he enjoys playing, enjoys representing Chelsea. He's always looking for goals. He's always looking to make something happen. He's looking to contribute defensively. I think he physically just enjoys being out on the pitch. So he's a player who I would say you're almost just as likely to keep him in good form and health by letting him play, letting him keep his confidence up. So, you know, personally, I have no problem if he starts, but, you know, if we rest him and save him for matches to come, that's
love that analysis that he definitely probably enjoys representing Chelsea week in, week out. He is a blue blood boy through and through. Rahul, a couple of questions for you here. There are some ex-Chelsea boys, or actually one is on loan representing. I don't think he will be able to play, and that's Ruben Loftus-Cheek. He's having a decent season playing for Fulham, given that they're struggling. And another one that is Ola Aina, who's actually also having a very decent season for Fulham. But at this point, it looks like they may not make it again. There's still a lot to play for. But thoughts on those two players, and if maybe Ruben Loftus-Cheek come back and has an opportunity to play for Chelsea?
Yeah, I mentioned we're light in the central midfield areas, so having Loftus-Cheek would have been nice. But for him to go out and get this experience with Fulham and get the game time that he needed, especially after that long-term injury, has been a good experience. And I hope he comes back and gets some time to impress Tuchel in preseason. And Ola Aina, he's done well. He moved away permanently from Chelsea. I believe he went to Italy and then has come back to Fulham, and he's done well. So if they go down, I believe some of the other Premier League teams may be in for Ola Aina. And there is one U.S. Men's National Team player, Anthony Robinson, the left back who plays for Fulham, and he was actually sent off in the last game between us. But he's been doing well, too, and I believe he could be staking a claim for being the first choice left back in the women and the U.S. Men's National Team. So keep an eye out for him.
Yeah, definitely exciting to see the talent that's coming through for the U.S. Men's National Team. I think they've got quality players littered across Europe now and other leagues, which is great to see. But before we jump into the end of this segment, guys, I want to get a quick score prediction from you. Alex, thoughts?
I think I'm cautious now about predicting too many Chelsea goals, as much as perhaps I would love to see it. I think we're perfectly capable of a 2-0 win. You know, maybe if we'd come away with that Madrid win, I'd be saying 3 or 4-0. But I think a solid 2-0 win would be the classic Tuchel trademark: clean sheet, clean win, get the job done. And Mason Mount, I think we could see, if he plays, we could see a Mount type excelling in this game. He was man of the match last time we played against Fulham, scored our only goal. I think he's perfectly positioned to take advantage of a game like this one. I think all of our attackers will be looking at this as another good opportunity to try to put the ball in the net, and I certainly hope we do. The Madrid game We can accept the 1-1. This one, I would be disappointed with a draw.
As with the hybrid. Rahul, your thoughts first.
You know what? I'm concerned by this game because Fulham are running out of time to guarantee themselves some opportunity to stay in the league. There's five games to go. They sit 7 points behind Brighton. And they've given some tough games to the bigger teams in this league. And their most recent game was against Arsenal at the Emirates, which they were leading up until the 96th minute. So with our attentions maybe a little towards Madrid later in the week, I'm a little bit scared and nervous that they may, Fulham may, you know, use this as an opportunity to start a run for safety. But I think Tuchel and the boys are aware of the top four race as well. And so I think we win it 2-1.
I personally think Tuchel has managed the squad very well. He's rotated the players correctly when needed to. At times we do scratch our head because there are quite a few changes, especially with the front three. But I think he has a vision in mind as to what he's trying to do. And I think we're slowly gelling and seeing better passing, especially from someone like a Jorginho and Kai Havertz coming to form. I'm a little more confident than what you're saying, Raul. I think I'm going to go for a 3-0 in this particular game.
If it happens, I'll be the happiest person. But we've seen what Scott Parker and Fulham have been doing all season. So be interesting to see how it goes down.
For sure. And before we wrap up the rest of the podcast, guys, let's look at a couple of games in and around us for the top four race. I'll start with Southampton versus Leicester. Alex, really quickly, any thoughts and maybe a score prediction?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one game where you expect Leicester to come away with it. But it's everything's crucial now. And it's just like, as you said, just like those teams, I think, just like as those teams at the bottom of the table are scrapping desperately to stay in the Premier League, all the teams at the top are completely aware of the implications of Champions League status and just playing in Europe in general. And now that the Super League has fallen through, it's all the more reason. These league standings absolutely matter at both the top and bottom ends of the table. So that's, I haven't watched enough of either team recently to make a true prediction, but I think Leicester probably wins it.
We have a gentleman in Leicester called Kili Iheanacho, and that man is on fire. So, Rahul, your thoughts on Leicester?
Yeah, it's a rematch from the FA Cup semi-final, and it's also for a rematch or a fixture in which Leicester have won 9-0 before. So I think using those 2 points, Southampton may have something to prove and maybe can get a draw and help us out with this top four race.
Wow, that would be interesting. It would be definitely a dream result if that happened to help us out. But I think Leicester are going to be a little bit too strong on the firepower and maybe are going to take 2-0 to Southampton. Could be wrong, but we'll see. And quickly before I move on, Kili Iheanacho doesn't get spoken about enough. So I just want to give him a quick minute here. 17 goals in 33 appearances for Leicester this season. So talk about a man in form. All right. Everton versus Aston Villa. Alex, any thoughts on this one?
I think this is yet another game where it's difficult to predict at this stage of the season, especially. Everton and Aston Villa are relatively close in the table, at least on points, rather. 8th versus 11th, you would assume that Everton probably has the quality to win this match. But then again, Villa have been outstanding on their day several times this season. We saw what they did to Liverpool early in the season. I think there's no reason either team couldn't win this one. So I'd predict a draw, perhaps. Both teams canceling each other out. I'm not sure it's going to be high scoring, but a draw is what I would go for there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. It sounds like a tasty fixture on paper, but I think with both of those teams probably canceling each other out, it might end up being a draw as well. But I'm going to go for 0-0. Rahul?
Yeah, I think it will be a draw too. Everton have been struggling a little bit at Goodison, and with Villa being in a little bit of form and actually losing some of the games that they shouldn't have recently, I think they'll come out and put in a performance. So a 1-1 maybe.
All right, then. Moving to, well, let me skip this game and come right back up because this next game is a bit of a clash. But Burnley versus West Ham. Alex?
That's one where you have to favor West Ham, but at the same time, it's difficult. It's difficult, especially at a late stage in the season, predicting where these teams' heads are going to be at. We saw, obviously, West Ham, we beat them to go above them in the table, meaning they're currently out of the Champions League spots. So surely they'll be taking a bit of motivation into this one. But then again, you have a team like Burnley, and that's the beauty of the Premier League, that can frustrate any team, no matter how good or how motivated they are to win a match. So I would expect West Ham to come up with it. I think Lingardinho might pull out a masterclass. Who knows? But that's the beauty of the Premier League. I'm not sure. But I would back West Ham probably for a maybe even a 3-1 win, considering they seem to enjoy going up three goals. And presumably against Burnley, they wouldn't lose or they wouldn't get pegged back on all three of those.
West Ham and Lingardinho. But Burnley didn't win their last game 4-0 against Wolves. So, Rahul, are you with Alex on this one?
I am, but Burnley just don't know. They can either lose or just score four goals against Wolves, which I was definitely not expecting. But the key thing here is the West Ham-Burnley game is on Monday afternoon or Monday night in England. And at that point, West Ham would have known all the other results around them. So I think that would factor into their performance and their motivation going into it.
I think I'm going to go with a West Ham win. I think they're going to have just a little bit too much firepower for Burnley. I think maybe the Wolves one was a slight upset, but again, it's the magic of the Premier League, like you guys are saying. So maybe 2-0 to West Ham, and that will allow them to keep the pressure on Chelsea as well. Now, the big one I skipped over, guys, before we wrap up the podcast today is Manchester United versus Liverpool. Now, in the scope of Manchester United, I don't think this game means so much to them. I think they have still enough breathing room from third place. But for Liverpool, this is a pretty big fixture. So, Alex, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, this is going to be quite the match. For Liverpool, this could be the difference between getting into Europe and not getting into Europe. Certainly Champions League, this could be a tell-all. But the teams right around Liverpool, Tottenham, Everton has a game in hand, and they're only 2 points behind Liverpool. Tottenham are even on games played, but only 1 point behind. There's no guarantee that Liverpool, if they don't really take their chances for the rest of the season, will get into Europe in any form. I think they definitely will. At least end up in the Europa League, but there's no guarantee, and that's why we love watching this league, and we love the end of the season especially. So I would back Liverpool maybe against the odds here. I think Manchester United certainly have been better this season. And normally I would say, independent of the high stakes, I would go with Manchester United on form versus form. But I think Liverpool know that this is a crucial moment for them. So I would back Liverpool for a 2-1 win, most likely, but I won't be complaining if Manchester United do us a bit of a favor and peg them back.
All great points there, especially the fact that Liverpool could miss out on Europe if they don't take the opportunities. Like you said, there's some vultures circling in around Liverpool to try and get into the Europa League as well. But Rahul, they drew their last two games, 1-1 against Leeds and then 1-1 against Newcastle. Do you have the same backing in Liverpool to beat Manchester United that Alex has?
It's a big game. Ole is going to have Manchester United fired, which can only mean it'll turn out to be a 0-0.
That is funny. And actually, I do agree with you. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does set up his teams to be a little more, not defensive, but cancel the other team out, especially in these big fixtures. So I'm going to go for a 0-0 as well. So all bodes well for Chelsea if all of these results come through, guys. It's maybe the West Ham one might throw us off a little bit, but bodes well for us overall.
Only if we win our game.
This is the first time we're doing this, which is our Voice of the Fans segment. As we mentioned, now that we've hit 1,000 followers, we want to interact with more of our listeners and followers. So today we have Benji from Sweden, who runs the Footy Fans YouTube channel. So welcome, Benji. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for calling in, and I look forward to our conversation here.
Yeah.
So let's get started. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and maybe your YouTube channel.
Yeah, so my name is Benjamin, but most people call me Benji, so that works mostly. I'm 13 years old, and I'm from Sweden. And our YouTube channel is called The Footy Fans, and we mostly post podcast stuff. Sometimes we live stream, sometimes we just talk about something with football. It could be mostly everything that has anything to do with football.
That's awesome. So I'm excited to hear that you started the YouTube channel at such a young age. That's great to see. I'll actually check it out. But let's talk about Chelsea. I think you're a Chelsea fan. So how did you start supporting Chelsea, and what attracted you to them?
That's a thing that I actually don't know. I know that my dad supported them. That's mostly very recent, but I also liked Diego Costa when he played.
Okay.
But there's something with Chelsea, you know, mostly, as I said, because of my dad, but I always watch the games. I remember I was quite young. I was just 4 or 5 years old that, but I remember I was watching I just remember a little bit of the final 2012 that my dad was screaming that we won. Otherwise, I don't remember that much, but why I supported Chelsea must be because of my dad.
Well, please thank your dad for us, because he's passing on some very good values to you.
Yeah, we'll do.
So, I mean, it's been a few years since we won the Champions League, but since you brought up the final, I'm sure you've gone back and seen the videos and seen the celebrations. So that was a very, very special moment for us. And in fact, Jackie and myself watched that game together. And I remember when we won, we were just so, so excited. So thanks for bringing that memory up. Does Chelsea have a big Swedish following?
I live in a city here that are quite small. We are just 40,000 people here. So from what I know, in my city, we are just like me and 5 people that support them. And I think it's mostly in Sweden, it's Liverpool and United fans. Some city fans, you know, supported them signs some years ago. But Chelsea fans, I don't think it's so big here in Sweden.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm hoping you can convert a few more people to become Chelsea fans.
Yeah, I'll try.
All right. So we've spoken about Sweden. Unfortunately, there's not been that many Swedish players that played for Chelsea. But just talking about Swedish players in general, who's your favorite player from Sweden?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I think we had one in Chelsea, but he played like one game. I can't even remember his name. It was like in the 1990s or something. It was too long ago, but... my favorite player in Sweden right now must be Dejan Kulusevski. I don't know if you know who that is.
I don't. Tell me more.
He's a winger or like cam that plays for Juventus. He's 20 years old, really good future star. He supports Chelsea, I think, and he really wants to play in Chelsea, said in some interviews. And he's a left-footed. He's more like Hakim Ziyech, but basically better with the right foot and taller, faster, you know. In my opinion, we should sign him because he's better than Ziyech, and he's much faster for his like height, how you say.
Yeah. Well, I'll definitely have to check him out. I'm sure since he's 20, a lot of European clubs will be looking at him, but he's at Juventus, which is a pretty good club for you to be at that young age.
Yeah. Man United wants to buy him, I guess, but they are a good team, and he's a good player, so would really want him in Chelsea.
Yeah, I hope our scouting department is listening to this so that they can check him out and and maybe put in a bid for him. But sticking on the Swedish players, we do have a Swedish player that plays for the women's team at Chelsea, and that's Eriksson. So any thoughts on her?
Yeah, we have two actually. Not to be that guy, but we have Anderson also. But
That's
Eriksson,
true,
I
that's
guess it.
true.
I think she's the captain.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, I think overall, even I always try to watch when the women's play the World Cup. Otherwise, it's not funny to watch them. So she's very good from international team. I haven't seen her so much in Chelsea's women, but I really want to see how they do in the Champions League. I think they are in the semi-finals right now
Yes, they're
of the Champions League.
actually. Yes, you're absolutely right. They're actually playing Bayern Munich this weekend, and the first leg, and then the second leg is the following weekend in London. So, exciting times for the women's team, I must tell you. I know you mentioned that you watch more of the World Cup, but if you get an opportunity to watch the Women's Super League, that's been very exciting, and Chelsea women have been doing very, very well. So, definitely check it out if you get an opportunity.
I'll do.
All right. So we've spoken about Sweden. We've spoken about Chelsea. We've spoken about a young player from Sweden that you would like to see at Chelsea. But is there a dream signing for you this summer that you'd like Chelsea to make?
I think we need to buy Haaland because mostly right now we win off a own goal, a penalty, a mistake. The team, you know, when we play City, we won because the goalkeeper, I think it's called Stefan, he wasn't good in the goal because what even did he do like on the line? He should have been much more closer to the goal instead of just talking to the bench. So we need someone that can score. Sorry. sorry.
No problem.
We need to see someone that can score more. Werner, if we get some next season, he will score more, hopefully. Really want him to succeed at Chelsea and that things, but Haaland or Marquinhos because he's a good CDM. He can play centre back also. Marquinhos is a player that I would really like to see him or Haaland, but mostly Haaland.
Yeah, that's. I feel like there's a lot of Chelsea fans out there that would like to see Haaland come in. And I'm one of them. I think, you know, if he comes in, he will elevate our attacking threats and attacking options. And you're absolutely right about, you know, the way we've been scoring recently hasn't been very convincing, apart from that Crystal Palace game. So yeah, we do need someone to come in and be the focal point of our attacking. Haaland, I mean, he's very young himself and actually portrays himself to be, you know, kind of a bigger player than he is at this age. So it'll be an interesting summer for Haaland. All right, so we've spoken about some dream signings. Let's bring it back to maybe a little bit closer to the first team squad right now. Any favorite players in the squad that you have?
Yeah, most of my favorites are Mason Mount and Christian Pulisic, but I think the ones that I like most is Mason Mount. Since the game versus Leicester where he scored, I always think forward that this guy is going to be something good. You see that on how he plays and everything. So yeah, Mason Mount is my favorite. Also, I have his shirt from this season, but yeah, I think my favorite player is Mason Mount.
Yeah, we talk about Mason Mount quite a bit on our podcast, and he's grown into some player this season. And last season, I think, was a season where he was finding his feet and adjusting to the Premier League. But this season, you can tell that he's just taken it to the next level. And I think he's pretty close to being nominated as one of the young players of the season in the Premier League.
I think it should be named the young player of the season. Yeah, Foden is good, but in my opinion, as I always say when we talk about those two guys, you want to score. Mount can score. Foden can also score. Foden scores more and assists more. But if you watch the games, you know, with your eyes, that's the thing. Watch the game is better than looking at stats. Mason Mount is, in my opinion, better than Foden. So I don't think there's have been any better young player this season. Trent hasn't been good. So in my opinion, Mount should be the one that are named young player of the season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Mount's shown his value to not only Chelsea, but the England squad too. So I think he's definitely got to be in the running for that award. And in fact, I think Chelsea themselves do the end of the season awards. And I think he should be up there as one of the players of the season for the club.
Yeah.
But yeah, and Christian Pulisic, I think, has had a tough time this season with injuries and his hamstring. But the last few weeks, the last month, he's coming back to himself. And that's very exciting for us to see as fans in the U.S.
Yes.
All right. So moving away from Chelsea a little bit, we do have the Euros coming up this summer. So just want to talk about that a little bit and get your thoughts on Sweden's chances and who you think will eventually go on and lift the trophy. So Sweden are in a group with Poland, Slovakia, and Spain. So your thoughts on that, Benji?
Yeah, we get Spain as always. I think we got them in our Nations League group as well. And we got them in the group to qualify for the World Cup this year. So yeah, always Spain. But Poland, we can beat Lewandowski. Yeah, Zielinski, I know, but I think we shall go second. Last time in the World Cup, we got first in the group versus four Germany, South Korea, and Mexico. So
that's true.
Now we have Zlatan, and he will show some class. But the team that will win it, I don't think England will win it. They have too many players that are good, but they don't have they don't have the chemistry. It's like saying, I think Messi and Ronaldo in the team, they wouldn't play good together, in my opinion, because Messi likes to play some football that Ronaldo doesn't like, you know. Mm. Messi wants to create, and he wants the team to be with him. Ronaldo just waits for the ball, and then you score. So that's the thing with England. But the team that will win it, I guess France again. Not again, but they won the World Cup.
Yeah. Or Portugal. You think Portugal can win it?
Portugal or France, but Portugal's a good team. That's the same with England. They don't have all the players, you know, playing the exactly same football.
Yeah.
France, you know, they have a team that are too good.
Yeah, France have too many options. I mean, I think they end up leaving some of the good players out of the squad because they just can't take them all. So yeah, they'll definitely be up there. And you bring up Portugal. I think Portugal have, in the past 2 years or so, you know, gotten a few more better players than they did the last time they won it. I think of a Bruno Fernandes, I think of a Pedro Neto. And so those supporting cast for Ronaldo is much better now. So you're right. They should be up there, but they are in a group of death with France, Germany, Hungary, and themselves. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes down. You brought up Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's come back from retirement. He's almost getting better with age. So your thoughts on him?
Yeah, Zlatan, he hasn't won the Champions League, but I really love the guy. He's so, in his interviews, he's just so fun to listen. You know, in Sweden, we have some, in Sweden, you know, either you hate him or you love him. I'm on the side, I love him because he's so good. And in Chelsea, he wouldn't be there. But yeah, Zlatan, amazing player, lovely guy. So yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that line that you described between loving him and hating him is kind of a global thing, because there's people that absolutely love him and love his interviews, like you said, and what he does on the field. And then some people are put off by that attitude. But at the end of the day, he's entertainment both on and off the field. So it'll be good to have him back at the Euros this summer. But that's kind of what we wanted to talk to you about, Benji. Is there anything that you'd like to bring up and discuss with myself?
No, not right now, but thank you for having me on. I'm really happy for you letting me being the first one, like guest, that is for the 1,000 subscribers. So I'm real thankful for having me, that you're letting me be on here. So thank you.
No, thank you for coming on, and thank you for interacting with us on Instagram and listening to the podcast. And we hope that, you know, we can talk to you very soon again, maybe before the Euros or during the Euros, and get your feedback on how Sweden are doing. And if Haaland comes in, then we'll definitely have to bring you back, because we want to hear your thoughts and your excitement about that signing. But until then, thank you very much for talking to us and sharing your thoughts on Chelsea, Sweden, and the Euros. And yes, do subscribe and listen to the podcast as you've been doing.
I will do.
All right. Thank you, Benji. Take care, my friend.
Thank you. And exactly the same for you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That wraps it up, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us. It's at the Premier Chels, Apple, Spotify, Google, Instagram, and on Twitter, it's at Premier Chels. Please also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That will help us get discovered and for new listeners to find us. But as always, send us your feedback, and we will be back next week with our next episode. But until then, stay safe and up the Chels.